Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Willie P. in the building. In for John Chuckery, who's on vacation. Hope you're enjoying yourself on this Friday night. If you got started early, have one for me. I have to tell you, as the 2 liter of Coke Zero gets down below a certain level, there's a particular ability of it to turn into from when it turns into a primary beverage to a mixer. We're looking forward to that here in about an hour. We'll take you in again through to 11 o'clock. If you missed our conversation earlier in the program with Radio.com MLB insider Bob Nightingale, you'll hear that again in 20 minutes. Bob had some real great insights, including what kind of buoyed his optimism with regards to us always kind of having baseball. You know, I was very pessimistic early on when it started, when the conversation started about baseball and the acrimony that existed between the owners and the players. And I didn't think they were going to get it done, if we're being truly honest. But they were able to somewhat mend their relationship, at least temporarily, before it all gets all the hell gets raised, if you will, when they have to go back to the bargaining table in November and December of 2021. We talked also earlier with Jason Longshore, our MLS insider and our Atlanta United broadcaster. If you missed any of that, you can certainly check it out via the radio.com app or at 929thegame.com. And, of course, full broadcasts of our hours, if you missed any of them, available also at 92.9 The Game once we're done here. Already the first 2 hours are up on our page, including both interviews with Bob as well as Jason. Before we get to our chance to talk to Bob, though, we want to tell you what's going on and what's happening.
Peter.
What?
What?
What's happening?
Major League Baseball is somewhat in a scenario where if you look at the plan in place is a thorough one. But despite the thorough nature of the plan, there's still a somewhat tepid nature that they're going to have to go through with regard to the safety protocols. And this was something that I said earlier. I was worried that this was going to kind of be put together at the last minute. Now, it's a 107-page document that they're having to go through with regards to the baseball protocols and the safety information that they have to go through from that perspective. But that doesn't sit here and tell you that, oh my goodness, it wasn't kind of developed in the last minute, especially once it took so long for the financials to take place. The clock was kind of ticking on the time that they needed for the season. Like, they wanted that thing turned around in a day. Because of that, you wonder how exactly players feel, how teams feel, and if you ask Buster Olney, the feeling is decidedly mixed.
I'm hearing at ground level that they think it is a mess. I think it's probably the least surprising development of all for people in baseball, that there is early on kind of a split among the players that's being sensed that we've seen in the country, where some people are all in and, you know, let's do everything we can, social distancing, wear a mask, and other players have a different perspective and they aren't as worried. And I got to tell you, you really feel like if you're going to have a chance to pull this off, you have to have everybody pulling on the rope in the same direction. And early on, that is not the case.
That's Buster Olney, who joined our Dukes and Bell earlier today on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. The part that's hardest to think about in my mind is the part he talks about next, where he says, when it comes down to, you know, watching players and whether or not players will be quarantined or not, the policing is going to have to come from the players themselves.
The peer pressure is going to be enormously important. Like, he believes that the players basically have to police each other as they move forward and to get each other going. And I got to tell you that the executives that I speak to who've heard that concept said, no, that's not working. There's no chance that that's going to work. We're going to have players aggressively policing each other under these conditions, especially because we've seen that different players have different perspectives on testing.
There's an accountability factor that is going to have to take place over the course of the next couple of weeks and months that we've never seen before in professional, and for that matter, collegiate sports, where your activity is going to, kind of monitor whether or not you get this virus. Although I literally just talked to somebody earlier this week who was a hand washer, a mask wearer, a diligent, person when it came to all the social distancing mores and things of that nature, and he still got the virus. So you can do everything you possibly can the right way, and it's still not going to prevent you from getting it. Now, again, there are certain ways to increase the suspicion and increase the ability to make that happen. I think there are some who might be typecast in that way, and that's unfortunate for them, but there are obviously much greater powers at work here than, of course, things that you and I are used to dealing with. On the field, the Braves get themselves back reported to both Truist Park and Gwinnett. They're going to split the two squads, basically with the Major League ready players in Atlanta, and they're going to put most of the taxi squad, if not all of it, at Gwinnett at Cool-Ray Field. One thing that is certainly a big part of the early portion of the schedule is the fact that you are going to be able to use 30 players right away. A lot of that is, of course, to supplement the pitching staff that's not fully stretched out. Tyler Flowers, who spoke on a Zoom call with reporters earlier today amongst the Braves, says the deep rotation can be an advantage for them early on.
I think that is something that maybe we have an upper hand in, just with all the talented arms we have, that we are maybe afforded a better opportunity than most to really not lose as much. Even though some of our guys aren't going to be able to go as deep, we have a number of guys that are capable of similar things. And you combine a couple of them together, we might end up with, having seven starters that end up going four innings apiece, which would be great.
Found out earlier today that the NFL's Hall of Fame game has been axed, something that might not necessarily have an effect on how you feel about the season being played or not, but it tells you that the NFL is willing to trim its quote-unquote non-essential operations in order to preserve the ability to have a season. There are some who believe that the entire thing is questionably essential, including Malcolm Jenkins, who spoke on CNN last night.
The NBA is a lot different than the NFL because they can actually quarantine all of their players or whoever is going to participate, where we have over 2,000 players, even more coaches and staff. We can't do that. And so we'll end up being kind of on this trust system where the honor system, where we just have to hope that guys are social distancing and things like that. And that puts all of us at risk, not only us as players and who's in the building, but when you go home to your families. I have parents that I don't want to get sick. And I think until we get to the point where we have protocols in place and until we get to a place as a country where we feel safe doing it, we have to understand that football is a non-essential business. And so we don't need to do it. And so the risk, has to be really eliminated before I would feel comfortable with going back.
That's Malcolm Jenkins. I said earlier, look, guys, I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's easy, but the nature of your business, it benefits more than just you. Like, it benefits the people who are ancillarily inside the organization. It benefits the game day workers. So, yeah, it might be difficult, but you carry a responsibility that's larger than your immediate family, your teammates, and even your franchise. It's the responsibility of all, really. And, you know, I'm not trying to make sports anything bigger than they already are, but there's a lot more livelihoods other than the 22 you might see on the field that are impacted by your behavior. And that's why I think as a business and as a life thing, something that's part of our culture, it is essential to get it back, and it's essential to follow the rules in order to make sure that we can get that back at its fullest extent as soon as possible. Of course, it probably is going to be a barrier at the beginning of this to have fans. Matt Ryan, our quarterback, who spoke on the Chris Long podcast, said that's going to create some unintended consequences that they'll have to deal with early on.
The thing that's going to be a pain in the ass if there's no noise is how often we're going to have to change audible words, code words, cadence. Because you talk about from the D-line perspective, you know, when you're playing at home in a place like Seattle, yeah, you're going to get five snaps a game where you're off the ball before the tackle's ready to go. But by the same token, if you're just getting into the rhythm of our cadence and listening to it over and over, you know, going against guys in practice, you get used to going against that same quarterback all the time, and you kind of get into how they sound.
That's Matt Ryan speaking on the Chris Long podcast. Matt's done a lot of media over the course of the last couple of weeks, including with us. And we've certainly appreciated a chance to get inside his head, which is something that we're usually afforded during the season, but getting that little extra opportunity here during the offseason has been nice, whether he's talking about football or his social justice efforts, which have been highly lauded and applauded, and deservedly so. Looking at the college game, and this kind of gets back to what we were talking about earlier with regards to whether or not you like or whether you have the stomach for your favorite college or pro team reporting positive tests. We talked about that a little bit earlier, and people have varying opinions on it. There's some who want to hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil, and there are others who think that it's a social responsibility not only to the public but also to the teams that they play to have that reporting come to pass. And it brings about an ethical quandary because of the fact that most of these college coaches, for the breadth of their time in the game, have been tight-lipped with extreme prejudice. And tight-lipped to the point where they become intentionally obtuse with regards to injuries. And this is an injury that's a much different type of animal because it's an injury that can be transmitted to the other team. You couldn't transmit a tweaked ankle to somebody on the opposition. This is a virus. Much different. There were some coaches who were quoted by Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports who said they would refuse to play a team that would not give them some sort of advance notice, whether it's via a public statement or something in private, whether or not they had people with positive tests. There are positive tests happening, whether we like it or not, on college campuses that only include currently athletes. There are people who are being very verbose about it, like Clemson and other schools, even in the SEC, like Alabama, who are saying so. Georgia is saying absolutely nothing, even though our friend Rowdy DeBolsey, Rivals.com, said, yeah, there's some positive tests out there. They're not going to say anything about them, but they're there. And there are people who have tested positive, according to people who've talked to inside the Georgia program. Greg Sankey, SEC commissioner, spoke on Bullock and Wingo on ESPN, says the problem is just beginning now. It's going to be even bigger once the students fully return to campus in the fall.
The college life experience when we were 19, 20, 21 years old will not be this fall's college experience. And that's one of the lessons that people will have to accept. And just like we've all had to change our lifestyle since March, the college experience will be a bit different. There'll still be residential learning. There'll still be education provided, but how we care for ourselves will have to be real. And so that's, we literally had a conversation yesterday about how can our student athletes help educate their fellow students to avoid spread. And that's one of the projects that still be worked on. But I know our campuses are preparing for the return, for providing the proper information, the proper resources, and the proper health care.
That's Greg Sankey, who spoke again on Golden and Wingo on ESPN. Also on what's happening, the NBA season restart is couple of weeks away, about a month and 4 days away, actually. The folks at ESPN earlier tonight released a schedule, which is going to take place from the 30th of July through the 14th of August. Again, the Hawks not included as part of that, cavalcade of teams, although I am happy that there is some work being done to try and ensure that they will not have that 10-month layoff that's been talked about, the fact that they will not have played a game from the middle of March until about December when the 2021 season is supposed to start. That schedule that was released tonight includes the opening night doubleheader on TNT between the Jazz facing the Pelicans and then the Clippers and Lakers. So LeBron, Kawhi, and Zion all getting prime billing on that first evening. That second night, you'll see Memphis and Portland play a twilight game at 4 o'clock in Orlando, followed by Boston, Milwaukee, Houston, and Dallas, amongst a full slate of other games. But those are the ones that will get national televised billing. And there will be national TV games every day throughout, with the exception they will be national TV for the last 2 days, the 13th and 14th, but they are waiting to announce the times on those in order to prioritize the ones that have playoff implications. It's funny, on the East Conference, on the Eastern Conference side, they only have 9 seeds, and then of course the rest are on the Western Conference side. That's where the more intriguing races are, because there are more teams that that made the cut for the bubble on the Western Conference side because of their proximity to the top in the NBA's standings. Again, we talked also earlier with Jason Longshore. He says, yeah, the rumors are out there for the Paraguayan international 18-year-old Olympia attacker Eric Lopez, but still nothing concrete on him. But he certainly fits the profile of player that Atlanta would possibly look for, especially in the absence of Joseph Martinez. That's, of course, after they lost him in the opening match of the season to Nashville. Atlanta's first game in the MLS's back tournament 2 weeks from Saturday against the New York Red Bulls, and you'll hear it right here on 92.9 The Game. That's an 8 p.m. kickoff from Orlando. 404-741-0929 is how you can touch with me, Willie P, at Willie P Style on Twitter. We'll come back. Bob Nightingale tells us whether or not he has optimism that the fighting that took place this fall won't resurface again about a year and 5 months from now, when these two teams have to go back to the bargaining table between Major League Baseball and the players. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and Radio.com. I'm happy that at least we are talking about baseball being back, though the logistics of getting it back were complicated. Man who joins us now on the WaitForIt.com hotline is our Radio.com sports insider, Bob Nightingale. His appearance brought to you by Dell Technologies Small Business Podference podcast series, available on Radio.com/Dell. Bob, I know last time you and I talked, the future for baseball was bleak, but your optimism was there. Why was your optimism so high, even when it looked like baseball was in its darkest days?
Well, I think it was a situation really where both sides realized it would be, a death sentence. There's no baseball strictly because of financial reasons. You know, during the pandemic, what the country is going through. We're talking about, 42 million Americans unemployed, over 120,000 deaths. They had to play baseball. I think if they did not, strictly because of financial reasons, I think it would set the sport back a couple decades.
I don't disagree, and I think that was something, or a frame that I was always humping, even though, like I said, it looked bleak for a time. My only concern now, and again, obviously outside of the immediate stuff involving the actual virus, is what type of underbelly this sets for 2021, because now it seems like people kind of know where the factions are set right now. The battle stations are set. They're basically going to come back to the same battlefield here in about a year and 5 months' time, and they're going to be at each other's throats again.
No, you're right about that. And they got to start negotiations early. Next year, they can't wait till the end, which is December 1st. But you're right. I mean, everybody's predicting, Armageddon, the sports shut down. I don't think the players are going strike. I don't see that. And they just lost 2/3 of a paycheck. I don't see them losing 1/3 of a paycheck next year. So, and we'll see. At least now they know each other very well, what they've been through. And maybe it'll be easier in the sense that, you know, right now with the pandemic, they were just doing their negotiations through conference calls and Zoom calls. You know, you need to be face-to-face, looking each other in the eyes, you know, pounding your fist on the table, storming up, you know, what have you. So I think that created a problem as well.
On the line is Radio.com Sports MLB Insider Bob Nightingale. Insider calls are brought to you by the Dell Technologies Small Business Conference podcast series, which is available on Radio.com/Dell. And Bob, now that we have a format in place, we know what's going to at least look like, what the schedule is going to look like, at least in concept. But from the procedure standpoint, these health aspects and the health procedures that are now in front of the players, what have you been hearing from teams as far as how confident they are in making sure that the players are going to be safe through this whole thing?
Well, I mean, they're crossing their fingers and they're all saying prayers, really. I mean, you just don't know. You know, you see all these college football programs being, you know, shut down here. 16 positive tests in the NBA for 300 players. You know, baseball's going to have about 1,600 players, so you're going to have about 100 positive tests. Don't know. I mean, who knows when they complete the season? Who knows if they even get a spring training? But they got to try.
Is there a particular threshold they want to avoid? Have you heard a number? Like, is there like a drop dead number that's like, oh, if we get this many, you know, we can't continue?
No, there really isn't. Yeah, in the read the safety and the health protocol manual, the 101 pages. But yeah, never mentions that. So you're going to have, you know, at the outset of the season, 30 players on the team in a 30-man taxi squad. So I would think it'd have to be, you know, 25, 30 players, you know, get sick before they would think about that. That's the reason the taxi squad. But there's no set number, you know, except, you know, I would think, realistically, the number would probably have to be around 30.
You know, Bob, I look at some of the teams that might be advantageous, at least in this, and you and I talked about this last time you were on with us, and you know, I think about the Braves, and I think about where they sit right now in a very competitive NL East, but their roster depth right now I think is well suited for the environment that we're walking into. How do you handicap where the Braves are having to play not only the AL East teams, but the NL East teams where I think they match up favorably?
You know, I feel sorry for the, you know, Braves, those teams in the NL East and AL East, because it's by far the toughest region. That's the area to want to be. I mean, even, you know, with the Braves having to play, you know, Tampa Bay was a very good team. Yankees are a very good team. Toronto's up and coming. You know, Boston's been there, done that. So it can be very tough. We'll see. I don't think depth's going to come in a big play this year because 60 games, you don't need a whole lot of depth. So you got to play well at the outset. Granted, Atlanta's a very good team, but in 60 games, nothing can happen.
Bob Nightingale joining us, not only from Radio.com, but also USA Today, MLB Insider, joining us here on the WaitForIt.com hotline. Willie P. in for John Chukri here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I think I don't want to say death knell, but the worst nightmare for MLB is if a prominent player kind of decides to opt out. I know that's something that has been talked about in other sports, and there have been certain players that have done that. Probably nobody to the level that would be earth-shattering, at least in some of these other sports. I know that it probably has affected some teams, but how much is MLB kind of behind the scenes encouraging those who might be on the fence to, you know, play, quote-unquote, for the good of the game?
Yeah, I haven't heard the union or the MLB lobbying any player, to tell you the truth. It's up to an individual. That being said, I don't see anybody opting out. If you have a real health concern, okay, people can understand that. But you can't do it strictly for finances. I think it would be your teammates, the fan base. You would ruin any endorsements and marketing chances you have. So, you know, when it, you know, comes here, it's got to be within 72 hours, I think less than a handful. And I think that handful will be strictly because of health reasons.
Who is a team that you think this particular format benefits that it wouldn't have benefited them to play a full 162-game season. Who do you think this rises up more when it comes to teams playing in a 60-game sprint as opposed to the marathon we're used to?
Well, it helps the teams, the bad teams. It helps the teams that had no chance realistically to compete over 162 games. I'm looking at the San Francisco Giants. I don't think they had any chance at all for 162. But a veteran team like that, some aging players. So I like the teams who have veterans on them because they're not going to get worn out during the season. It's just going to be a deal where everybody has a chance. So that the veterans usually get tired, mid-season and everything else. Now there's no reason to get tired. So it really benefits just teams that had no chance. Because I really believe that one or two teams, one or two flukes are going to make the postseason.
Bob Nightingale joining us, USA Today, and also Radio.com MLB Insider here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Games. We talk about baseball's return. The players are back starting midweek next week. The games start in about 3 or 4 weeks' time. I'm almost wondering now, Bob, just because if we take the DH and put it over to the side and assume that that's going to be in place in perpetuity, which one of these new wrinkles when it comes to gameplay do you think has the most lasting staying power when you think about, the extra inning rule or some of these other procedural rules with the roster, the maybe stuff happening with the extra inning? Like, what do you think has a chance to possibly stick, even maybe a fully shortened season now for the rest of baseball's incoming future?
Well, I think the DH for sure. It's only in place for this year, not even next year. I think it stays around. I really believe that. So I think that rule stays. I think next year we'll go back to the regular rules and extra innings and play it out. I think fans may say, you know what, we kind of like the shortened extra inning. As players have explained to me, even the purists, it's like if you look at the four major sports, baseball has the most boring overtime. when the ninth inning's over, fans head to the exit. You hear the moaning and groaning in the broadcast booth, the press box with the writers and everything else. So it's become boring overtimes. I mean, actually, it is in baseball's case, in the sense that everybody just swings for the fences. So that's got a chance to stick around. The one rule I really do not like this year that was already implemented was a pitcher facing three batters, a minimum of three batters. I think in this short spring and everything else, some of these pitchers won't be ready. So I can see a reliever coming in a key situation, walking three straight guys or walking a couple of guys and giving up a home run. I don't think it's fair now with a short in.
One last one for you, Bob, and this kind of speaks to something we talked about earlier. Just looking at the game as a whole and looking at kind of how it's going to be consumed, how do you see baseball trying to take advantage of national TV windows? I know that a lot of those opportunities are dwindling because they're kind of late to the party when it seems like MLS and NBA brought up a lot of real estate. How will they try to get the game some eyeballs they wouldn't have ordinarily had with some national TV exposure?
Well, what they want to do really was have broadcast enhancements, and where they were going to pay the players about $5,000 a piece if you wear a mic during a game. It'd just be for an inning or so, and or particularly the guys who can talk to each other during a game, like what happened with Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo last spring, during spring training. So that's gone. We'll see how much the players cooperate. Some will. But that's a chance, because it could be very dull with no fans at all, just a couple of camera angles. It's very important to keep the fans engaged. I mean, obviously, it's going to help the games are worth, 2.7 times more than a regular season game because of the reduced schedule. But that would have really helped as far as the enhancements. So we'll see. We'll see if the fans get bored or the fans say, you know what, it's almost like an NFL season because these games mean so much.
Joined us again earlier today in the program, and he did it on the waitford.com hotline. Appreciate his candor. And look, there was an opportunity to be had there. And he mentioned the in-game stuff, the particular enhancements that could have bridged the gap between fan and player. But I don't know where the opportunity is. I mean, I know that there's still an appetite from their broadcast partners like Turner and ESPN and Fox to try and get some programming, anything to keep from having to run more reruns of things like we don't want to see, like Super Bowl 51, et cetera, and so on. But, you know, for me, as far as I'm concerned, the space is getting crowded. The NBA is going to command some TV windows, as is the MLS. And lo and behold, you know, with football training camp starting at the end of the month of July, there's going to be an appetite from ESPN to want to talk about that. So it's not as if they have the endless swath of opportunities like they would have had if they had started their season 2 or 3 weeks ago, like we thought they might have if they hadn't have gone into this, you know, meaningless back and forth garbage that they put its fan base through, what's left of it, over the course of the last 6 to 8 weeks. 404-741-0929, an appreciation of a legend and a confession from me before we close. Willie P. for John Chuckery, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, and online at radio.com. Parts that I had to handle were not handled with a plum, but it's all good. Glad that one of us was working that way. But I did want to close, even though the news is about a day old, the career of Vince Carter in Atlanta will be a footnote in comparison to the rest of his NBA career. But we might get to see the lasting impact of it when you look at the young players he might have been able to impart wisdom upon, if in fact this franchise does take the next step over the next couple of seasons. I fully think that John Collins is going to get either a max deal or close to that and be in Atlanta uniform for the foreseeable future. I think that Trae Young could get basically whatever he writes on a piece of paper with his new agent at Clutch Sports and have whatever he wants after next offseason when the Hawks are able to talk to him for the first time. But I know one thing is for certain, is that Vince Carter handled his way and handled his business with about as much class as anybody who's existed in this league, and did so over the kind of transformative career that lasted the type of duration that is not seen in any sport. Like, to give you kind of the perspective that I'm in, you know, when he came into the league, you know, I was still, you know, in junior high, and I'm 13 years into the business now and had a chance to see every bit of his career, not to completely date myself, but that's kind of, that just gives you the type of framework of how much his career spanned over the course of time. The one thing that I will think about when I think of him is what he said to me in my first interview that I did at 92.9 The Game about a year ago. It was during a chance that I had to fill in on Dukes and Bell with Mike, and we had a chance to talk to Vince. We didn't get a lot of lead time on it. It was about, I think, a segment and a half that we got the message from our bosses to say, hey, by the way, we're going to have Vince call in and you know, be prepared to talk about his return to the team for another year. And we all kind of knew that it was going to be his last year. So yesterday's news wasn't exactly shocking, but the thing that will remain with me is what he said when I asked him, you know, going into the season, how much do you feel like you're kind of a second coach and how much do you feel like you're a player? And his response was,
no coaching for me. I'm all player and this player. I feel good, you know, and I wouldn't come back if I wasn't able to compete and contribute. So, I'm ready to go, and I will be ready to go come season time. You know, the worst part of all of this is the preseason and training camp. You know, that's what it takes, a beating on your body. Your body is getting used to playing, you know, and practicing this much again and playing, you know, this much basketball. But I feel good, man, and just whatever is needed for me, I'll be ready.
That was Vince Carter again on Dukes and Bell about a year ago, going into his final season in the NBA. And I just thought that was like one of the most badass things I'd ever heard an athlete say. Like, you know what? I could have said the stock answer. He's like, no, I'm not a coach. I'm a player. And that always be something that kind of sticks with me. And, you know, whether it's him in the slam dunk contest, whether it's him jumping over Frederick Weiss in the Olympics, or just having the type of role that he had here in Atlanta. He had the same kind of in Dallas as well. I totally forgot about the stop in Phoenix and the stop in Orlando, somewhat forgettable. He'll mostly be known for what he did while he was in New Jersey and Toronto and basically putting that Toronto Raptors team on the map to start that franchise's infancy. That is the whole thing that if you look at the way that he exemplified the sport, it really stands out. And it also is a credit to the ambassadorial aspect that he had on basketball. Like, I don't think anybody took the phrase ambassador of the game as seriously as he did, just in my interactions with him. And again, it's only a handful compared to other guys like Mike Conti, who, if you missed his piece on 929thegame.com, I encourage you to read it. He goes into detail about how, you know, Vince made him feel very welcome at his home when he was on a road trip with the Hawks in Orlando. And that was something that stood out to him, and just the way that he handled himself. And there really isn't a single person who would say a bad word about Vince Carter inside the game or out of it. But the one thing that I would look at again is that ambassadorial aspect. He took that whole thing very seriously and knew what his role was, not just in the game, but, you know, he didn't want to have the quote-unquote retirement tour, but he knew, like, there were times where, you know, he, you know, would not necessarily take off, but not play as much in a home game in order to run the full complement of minutes for a game on the road. And I find myself fortunate that I was able to sit there and see that last game and that last shot. I was actually at that final game. I've told the story on air a couple times about how, you know, I was sitting there with my sister. We were at the game together, and just seeing the looks on people's faces as the news came across that, you know, sports is going to be put on hold and put on pause. And just the look on Lloyd Pierce's face once the result of that game was basically left without a doubt, that he's like, oh my goodness, we have to give Vince a moment here. And Vince talked about that on his podcast and said, you know, that having that moment kind of eased the awkwardness of leaving, because at least he made his last shot. And that part of it, like I said, it's not going to continue. It's not going to take away the awkwardness, but it at least alleviates his ability to at least walk away from the game knowing that he made his final shot. And I don't know who takes that leadership role next season. You really don't have the kind of a veteran presence outside of maybe a guy like a Capella, but he's not really what I would consider to be a full-fledged vet. That's something that's very, very hard to duplicate, and something I think that is needed on this squad, which again is still very much in its infancy. And I know he wasn't able to teach this team how to win, but hopefully when it comes down to when this franchise is in winning time, hopefully he left them with something that they can take and run with. I do want to close also kind of in that same vein, because as I was, you know, going about my business yesterday, I, you know, went and did kind of my usual routine after getting done with some of the web work that I've been doing for 92.9 and et cetera. I went to go get food out at, I think it was Chipotle or something like that. And I got home, plopped on the couch, and I thought to myself, darn it, I really wish there was a ball game on right now, and not baseball or just anything. Anything to to diffuse the kind of agony that we've been going through, especially over the last couple of days, as you kind of you see in the news, whether it's the stuff involving the virus, whether it's the constant battle we seem to be going through right now with people who are fighting for social justice, and I would say admirably and justifiably, against those who still don't seem to get it, and some of the exhaustive topics that we've had to go through, you know, the stuff involving Bubba Wallace, which again, despicable in nature. I just wish there was a ball game on to just kind of, you know, because that was always the release. That was always the thing that you would cling to and say, okay, you know what? The rest of the world outside is kind of bad. It's kind of dumb and it's kind of agonizing. But I could turn on the Braves, or I could turn on a basketball game, or I could turn on a hockey game, golf. And while we have some of that stuff back, it just doesn't feel the same. And I have to confess that I took it for granted. I absolutely did. It didn't really hit me, though, until last night. And, you know, I come to this realization knowing that, you know, what I do for a living, different than what other people do for a living, is that, you know, I fueled one of my hobbies growing up as a child into a career. And that's something that is a desire I wish for basically anybody who grows up with any type of aspirational desire to either get into this business or any other that's hobby driven. Like I had two hobbies. I love to eat and I love to watch sports. And I knew at a very early age I needed to do one or the other in order to satisfy myself as a career, or I was going to be miserable. Miserable as a worker. And again, it's not that there aren't miserable days in this business, but a miserable day doing this is better than good days doing other things, as far as I'm concerned. So I don't want to say I took that part of it for granted, but I took the part that I get from watching sports for granted. And I took for granted that, you know, I could, at any given time, go up 75 from where I am in Midtown and plop down and go to a Braves game. And I've taken the Mike Bell philosophy on this since I've come to Atlanta. You know, I used to get into a lot of those things for free as a member of the media. And I will say this, getting in for free is nice, but it ain't like sitting inside the bleachers and drinking a cold beer. Those press boxes are very static, very, very, you know, stale when it comes to the air in there. I covered, you know, the Houston Astros for a couple of seasons when I was working down there. And, you know, I had a season-long credential, and I would go every as often as I could. But I can't sit here and tell you that I wasn't tempted to sneak down to the club level and grab a Carbach brew. Because that's what it was like kind of watching some of those Astro teams. This is before they won the World Series. And so since I've gotten to Atlanta, I've kind of taken that Bellian approach where it's like, you know what, I'll pay my own way in and I'll enjoy myself. Because I'm realizing now I took that part of it for granted. Yeah, it's nice to be able to go inside the press box and go in the clubhouse and interview players. And I'll still do that from time to time because I do feel like that part of it, being seen by the people who you're talking about on a daily basis, is important. And, you know, being seen on things like the Zoom call, like with Tyler Flowers earlier today, that stuff's important. But I took sports for granted before last night, and I hope that I won't do it again because I miss it, and I hope that it, when it comes back, provides the same kind of fulfillment that it has for the time that I've been alive. Thanks again to Marshall Parker. Hope you enjoyed yourself tonight. We'll talk again on Monday. For the vacationing John Chuckery, I'm Will Pelagic. Willie P. in the building saying so long and have a good rest of your weekend. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and Radio.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.